Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It is an act of war, what took place. Our objective is to make sure they pay the highest price possible for the inhumanity they visited upon our country.
Vice President Joe Biden on CBS Face the Nation yesterday, part of the battle of the Veeps on the Sunday talk shows. He was reacting to exchanges like this between Dick Cheney and Jonathan Carl on ABC This Week.
But you believe they should have had the option of everything up to and including waterboarding?
I think you ought to have all of those capabilities on the table.
So even if nobody else does, Dick Cheney still believes in waterboarding. But the biggest news came from Biden, who officially reopened the door to a military trial rather than a civilian one for the 9/11 suspects in his interview with Bob Schieffer on CBS.
But are you leaving open the possibility that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed may be tried in a military tribunal and not in a civilian court? Because that's a question that people are asking questions about right now.
No, I think it's a legitimate question. That's one we're considering right now based upon
you are
what
considering
our options
that.
Are.
You are
well,
considering
we are
that.
Still, well, we have to consider it because we don't know what political constraints can be placed on us in terms of the cost of trying the case in a criminal court in the federal system. But that is still our preference.
And with me now to talk about that and other issues is the just retired legendary Manhattan District Attorney Robert Morgenthau, now 90 years old, but here in our studio, despite our offer to join us by phone. So, D.A. Morgenthau, thanks so much for coming in, and welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, first on that question that the Vice President was addressing, what's your opinion about military versus civilian trials and whether they should take place in Manhattan?
There are two questions there. Trials should not take place in Manhattan because of not only the impact on the community, but the impact on the state criminal justice system. Last year, Manhattan Criminal Court, 106,500 cases. That means a lot of defendants have got to be brought down by the police through roadblocks, jurors have got to come in, defense witnesses, lawyers, prosecutors. It's an incredibly complicated system. And then the defendant has to be turned over from the police to the Department of Corrections, held, has to be photographed, interviewed by the Criminal Justice Agency, blood test, then turned back to the police, brought up to the courtroom, interviewed by a defense counsel, finally by a judge. I think that system would come to a halt if you had roadblocks all around the courthouse. I mean, we got a little glimpse of that with the Republican convention. People blamed the police for the delay. There's one case where the police were absolutely not at fault. It's just a very cumbersome system.
And that was all the way up at 34th Street.
Right.
But then people were detained en masse and brought to the courts.
But I just, because I was down there trying to expedite those cases. Oh, in addition, the fingerprints have to be taken, sent to Albany. The district attorney has to interview the arresting officer, file a report. Then the district attorney's report, the police report. Fingerprints have to be what they go married.
So the bottom line is that all the security that would be required around the area of the courts, around Center Street there, would shut down, you think, bring to too much of a standstill the rest of the court system.
I think it would, the state court system. And then there's another thing to bear in mind, and that is that immigrants who want to get work permits or any papers have to go to 26 Federal Plaza. And they're going to be scared to death to go through a police roadblock. So you're going to have a huge negative impact on the whole immigration service.
How about the military versus civilian trials?
Well, that's a very complicated issue, and I don't think this case can be taken alone. I mean, what they do here is going to set a precedent. Now, certainly the military are less qualified by experience to try these cases. As a very young naval officer serving on a destroyer, I was at what was called a deck court officer. I used to hold court martials. And I remember my only objective was to get that case over with and without any appealable issues. So I wasn't interested in anything else other than me trying to make sure the case couldn't be appealed. Certainly the civilian courts, the United States attorneys, have more experience in handling complicated cases than any military commission. So I would lean toward a civilian court to try it, but I realize it's not a simple issue. And whatever they do in this case is going to set a precedent for all of the cases.
As Manhattan DA, did you ever prosecute an accused terrorist?
We did. And it minor compared to what's going on now. But the other thing to bear in mind is that the reason the World Trade Center was selected as a target was to get the maximum publicity. And seems to me we're just playing into the terrorists' hands by having this trial in Manhattan. Media center of the world, and this is exactly what they want. They want publicity. And also, they wanted to commit suicide. So a trial is not going to be intimidating for them or their followers.
On the other hand, I think President Obama and Attorney General Holder want the world to see our justice system and the fairness of our justice system and these criminals treated as criminals rather than warriors and brought before a justice system. They want that publicity.
Well, there are always compromises, but that publicity could be obtained by having the trial at Governor's Island, and I think that's the logical place to do it, or Stewart Air Force Base or someplace else, but not in an area that is overcrowded with government facilities the way Lower Manhattan is.
With your experience, what do you think about the issue of reading terrorists, accused terrorists, their Miranda rights, and whether that really hampers interrogation in pursuit of intelligence for national security purposes?
Yeah. I mean, each case can be taken on its own merits, but I think we want to treat terrorists fairly. I want it to be perceived that we treat terrorists fairly, because if we're trying to convert the Arab world to democracy, we got to show that we're fair. So I would favor giving them every protection available under United States law.
But is anything lost, say, in being able to learn what's really going on in Yemen after that suspect on Christmas Day was arrested, by reading him Miranda rights and letting him have a civilian lawyer after just a few hours? Do you think anything's lost in terms of national security?
I think we should have just been listening to his father and would have gotten all the information that was necessary.
D.A. Robert Morgenthau, my guest on WNYC. Let me play you one more clip of the vice president on CBS Face the Nation making a prediction about the outcome of a Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or other 9/11 suspects trial. Listen.
Looking at the evidence that has been made available to me as part of in a generic sense, the executive branch of the prosecuting team, I am absolutely convinced. I am absolutely convinced he will be put away for a long, long time.
Is that appropriate, in your view, for the president or vice president to predict a conviction like that rather than say they are for the justice system to impartially determine guilt or innocence?
The latter. I think it's always inappropriate for anybody in an official position to predict the outcome of a trial. And those kind of comments are going to be difficult to handle for anybody who's who's prosecuting that case. I mean, I have great respect for the Attorney General, for Eric Holder. I think he's going to do the right thing, and I think he's going to make sure that there's a fair trial and a just trial. But I want to clear you. I was on the receiving end of 17 suicide attacks. 17. They call them kamikaze attacks in those days. And I frankly didn't think I was going to be here today or any time in the past.
Where were you stationed at that time?
I was on a picket station on a destroyer in Okinawa. So I'm not soft on these guys. And I know what our people have gone through in dealing with them. But I think we want to be known as a country that is fair. And if we want to export our system of democracy, it's got to be a fair system.
Do you see a moral difference between the suicide bombers who were the kamikazes for Japan in World War II and these suicide bombers?
No. I frankly never thought those kamikaze planes, I never expected to see that country turn around the way it did. It gives me some hope that the people involved in suicide attacks now will see the light. But if we want to be perceived as an open and fair country, we got to treat people openly and fairly.
People say a big difference is that they were in uniform for the Japanese, flying as pilots in their Air Force, I presume. Whereas these suicide bombers don't represent a country and are not in uniform. Hmm. Therefore, they get less rights under Geneva Conventions or anything else.
Well, we picked up some bodies, and they were in uniform. They were wearing white shrouds. but I don't see any difference. As I say, we want people to believe in democracy and democratic institutions. We can treat people fairly.
Former DA Robert Morgenthau, my guest on WNYC. On another topic, you've joined a brief from the Brennan Center and wrote an op-ed piece in the Daily News about a shortage of defense attorneys for indigent clients. Why is a prosecutor arguing for more defense attorneys?
Because as a prosecutor, I always slept better at night if I knew the defendant was well represented. I mean, our criminal justice system is an adversary system, but for it to work, you've got to have competent people on both sides of the table. So I've always supported young people going into defense work, adequate budgets for defense attorneys. It's critical to our system of justice. Now, maybe it's adversary system and not has flaws. It does, but it's the best thing around, and we got to support it.
And what's the situation? What's the shortage?
Inadequate pay. I mean, there are six counties that have inadequate defense organizations, and system's not going to work. I was talking. One of the counties is Washington County. I was talking to upstate, east to northeast of Albany. I was talking to somebody from there last night, and he said, well, I mean, the problem is, among others, that the county spent $60 million getting a waste disposal program, which didn't work, and they don't have any money. For the system to work fairly, you've got to have competent lawyers on both sides.
I know you've also been thinking about immigration law and the interface between the criminal courts and immigration courts and immigrant detention. This is something you said you were going to work on after your retirement, and now you are. What have you been thinking about?
Well, I mean, I think the way we treat immigrants is a national disgrace. And I'm ashamed of what we do.
Including illegal immigrants?
Including, I think, anybody who's here in the United States, legal or illegal, is entitled to the full protection of the law. And they're not getting that. I set up an immigration program in the DA's office, and I publicly announced on a half a dozen times that we would turn nobody over to the federal authorities long as they continued to deprive these undocumented immigrants of their constitutional rights. And it's a very, very serious problem. And again, it's a stain on our reputation.
You wouldn't turn criminals, convicted criminals, over to immigration for deportation rather than house them in our jails and charge the taxpayers for that if they were illegally here?
Well, that's a different situation. But I'm talking about somebody who's arrested. And the policy now is they serve their time and then they're deported. And that's a double punishment. But I would turn nobody over until the federal government changes its ways.
So you're 90 years old. You just retired after 34 years as DA. And you already took a job with a law firm. Right. What are you doing?
Well, there's some things, obviously, when you're in private practice that you can't talk about. But I'm keeping busy, and I'm meeting this week with people on immigration law. I met with Judge Katzman, who's a judge in the United States Court of Appeals, has a committee on immigration, and I don't want to just do something that is ineffective. I want to try to do something. I say there are two problems. One is the law themselves have to be changed, and number two, the way they're applied. Let me give you one example. Just before I left, we indicted a man who had taken money from 19 undocumented workers to get them green cards. He sent all the background information on them to the Immigration Service, knowing that since they were in the country illegally, they couldn't get a green card. Now, Immigration Service has brought deportation proceedings against these 19 people. And we said to them, look, you've got to give consideration to somebody who cooperates in a fraud case. Sorry, the law is the law. There's nothing we can do. So these 19 people who cooperated, put a man in jail who was stealing from immigrants, they're all going to be deported.
Here's a question from a listener on our webpage named Eva. And she remembers an interview that you did with our reporter, Bob Henley.
I remember Bob Henley.
Henley asked something like 10 consecutive Treasury secretaries. Oh, that you said that you had asked something like 10 consecutive Treasury secretaries to help you shut down the offshore tax havens that allow people and organizations to evade taxes on very substantial earnings. But each Treasury secretary turned you down. After decades of this, you said, according to our report, that you could only conclude that the reason why no Treasury secretary would help you shut down and prosecute the offshore tax havens is because the Treasury secretary is appointed by the president, who in turn must be accountable to major donors who benefit from offshore tax havens. Is that an accurate description of what you said?
No, and unfortunately, it was four secretaries and not 10. But they had a number of reasons, but I don't... I don't think it was because the president got campaign contributions. But it is a very serious problem, and I've talked to a couple of commissioners of internal revenue about it, and I remember the last time I went down, one of them said, we made a study, and 84% of the people pay their taxes. And I said, yeah, but that leaves 16% who don't. And I think the United States has got to reduce its taxes if we're going to remain competitive. But we can't do that unless everybody pays their fair share.
Before you go, can you name any cases from your DA career that you think are the most important to your legacy?
No. I have always said every case is important to the victim.
Let me try something. Your Wikipedia page, you know Wikipedia?
I do.
Your Wikipedia page lists 7 notable cases. Mark David Chapman, who killed John Lennon. Bernie Goetz, the subway gunman, Robert Chambers, the preppy killer, Central Park jogger case, 1989, BCCI, Sante and Kenny Kimes, and Dennis Kozlowski and Mark Swartz, the two top executives of Tyco. Are they on the right track, whoever wrote that, about the kinds of cases that were most important that you prosecuted?
Yeah, I mean, yes, they are. And I'll tell you one thing about the Kimes case that I thought it was particularly significant was that there was no body. And it was the first time in New York State that anybody had successfully prosecuted people for murder where there was no body recovered and no witnesses. So I thought that was an important precedent. But yeah, all those cases were important.
Any regrets about the 1989 Central Park jogger defendants? The case so polarized the city on racial lines. The five kids' convictions were much later vacated when another man claimed responsibility for the attack. How do you look back on that?
Well, it was not a happy day. But this prisoner up there on the Canadian border said, I did it, and I did it alone. We first thought the guy just wants a free trip to New York, but we had his DNA taken, and it confirmed that he was the person who did it. Then we proceeded to a lot of interviews to make sure that we hadn't missed anything. But then, I mean, the statute says, and I kept telling people, read the statute. The statute said, if there's newly discovered evidence, which, if available at the time of the trial, would probably have resulted in a verdict more favorable to the defendants. And how could you say, you got a guy who says, I did it, and confirmed by DNA. So we could not, under the law, we can't move to vacate a sentence. But I told the defense counsel, and I told the judge that we would consent to a motion to vacate that sentence, and we did.
One more question about KSM. Are you as confident as the vice president is about these convictions? With your experience in civilian court, we have cases here where defendants were not read their rights and were tortured in some cases. A lot of evidence will get excluded. Will they still be convicted? Is it still a slam dunk?
I think it's inappropriate for a lawyer, and particularly a former prosecutor, to make a prediction. All I can say is that I have great confidence in the Attorney General of the United States, and I think he'll put the best case available forward, and I think he'll try to see the case tried fairly and even-handedly, The jury will decide.
What's your most important piece of advice to your successor, Cy Vance Jr.?
Most important thing is to make sure you hire good people on a non-political basis and support them in the work that they do.
D.A. Robert Morgenthau, now retired after 34 years in office and now working in private practice. Good luck at the new job and keep speaking out.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming down.
I got a correct one.
Yes.
35 years.
35 years. You start in the middle of a term?
Hogan died. I was elected in 74. So I served a full 35 years.
35 years. I stand corrected. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we will continue to introduce our Help Wanted radio series and Facebook community for job hunters and those who want to help them. One of our job-seeking bloggers who works in the fashion industry, followed by a report on a New York skill shortage that's leaving many job openings unfilled. Stay with us.